Thank you very much, everyone, for coming along. So my name is David Glover, and I'm in our developer group in Microsoft, based in Sydney and Melbourne. And we have Nick.
Hi, everyone. Nick Randolph, Built to Roam. Some of you may have seen me before.
Yes, I think we've pretty seen us both around the traps quite a bit in terms of mobility, certainly in Australia. So this session is really talking about why Windows Phone in the enterprise, what the capabilities of the platform are, and why it kind of lends itself to the environment. And the other aspect we're going to talk about is kind of like the whole management and application deployment within an organization. So that's kind of roughly where we're going with this session. So I hope that's kind of what you had in your minds for this session. So
it's worth noting, I mean, it's a small group of us, so if you've got questions as we go through, just you know, call out and we'll try and address them as the best we can.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So I think, again, if you've been along to the phone sessions, is everyone registered on this? Fingers crossed, yeah, hopefully you are. That's kind of our main community reach out for the Windows Phone developer community in Australia. And that's the kind of the best way to connect with us. So in terms of why Windows Phone and the enterprise, and I guess the starting point is what we've done around that's unique around Windows Phone and our Windows platforms is the whole objective behind this is to provide, a very consistent and touch-friendly world for user experience for end users inside organizations or wherever they may be. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. So create a very scalable platform from devices all the way through to tablets, through to desktops, in a consistent user experience. So that's one of the key things we're trying to do, and obviously there's lots of benefits around that, reducing training costs and familiarity with the environment and things like that. I guess the other thing that we have that's unique to Microsoft is really around some of the productivity things, which are absolutely core to most organizations running their businesses. And clearly, that's things like Office. So within the platforms, you've got Office pretty much everywhere, be it on the tablets or be it on phones. You've got great implementations of Outlook and PowerPoint and Excel and OneNote and things like that. So again, you've got that consistency of experience. A lot of organizations have deployed Link. It's geared towards organizations. It's secure. It's encrypted. All those types of things that people want for doing business online inside organizations. There's SharePoint access and things like that. So if you've played around with the Windows Phone, you know that you can go and hook up to lists inside SharePoint where people have the documents and all that type of good stuff. In terms of application capability, they're all pretty mature platforms now in terms of being able to support a wide range of applications out there. The developer tools are mature. It's all typically type-based languages, robust, and et cetera. Secure. And on top of that, we've got so a lot of capability in the organization in terms of our products, things like Windows Intune, so be able to manage, look at your inventory, understand what devices are out there inside of an organization, and for things like System Center, being able to deploy software out to those and just kind of understand the overall picture of assets that an organization may have. So that's kind of the end-to-end picture, and obviously we're going to kind of drill down into this a bit more. I guess on top of that is that the strong message out there is it's a shared core, Windows shared core, and just to kind of give you a flavor, there's something like 1.3, I think the last count was, 1.3 million billion devices out there that are running the Windows NT kernel, and that's obviously Windows across the desktop range. It could be server. Could be things like Xbox, the devices in car, and things like that. So it's a well-tested and well-proven, and I would argue also, it's a platform and a kernel that's been attacked a lot. And obviously, the more you attack a platform, the stronger you can get in terms of understanding what particular ways in which people might try and compromise a system. There's lots of choice out there. So that kernel runs across a whole range of devices out there, and it makes it obviously very easy. In terms of from a development perspective, to be able to target multiple platforms. And one of my colleagues kind of works on a rough rule of thumb of around about 30% extra. So if you were targeting Windows Phone, for example, and you also want to go and build for Windows 8, then maybe think about 30%. Fair enough?
Yeah.
30% kind of in that kind of range in terms of maybe additional effort that you might need to do to target both platforms. Now, one of the things we're trying to do as well is we're trying to reduce that difference between the platforms. So you'll see going forward in terms of phones and Windows 8 and things like that, that we're going to narrow that gap in terms of things that you need to do differently on the platforms. And because we share the same kernel, we share the same device driver model, all those types of things out there, be it on the phone or being it on the desktop or tablet, from a manufacturer's perspective, it is the same device driver model. So that's all that they obviously they can test those across multiple platforms and make sure again that they're very high quality out there.
And this we're seeing this in the market at the moment, particularly if you look at the phone space versus the desktop space. Obviously now with Windows Phone 8, we've actually got effectively the same kernel there that runs both the slates and also the phones. So what we've seen over the last year or so is there's quite a large number of devices coming to market, particularly from Nokia. So we're now seeing a full cross-section of low-end devices that are still sort of sporting the wide VGA all the way through to the wide XGA. We've seen less uptake of the 720p devices just because they are a slightly different aspect ratio. And so you do have the majority of developers targeting for those other two platforms. So to go to the other side is... hasn't seemed to be on the roadmaps of most of the OEMs. The other thing about today is that we're currently sitting around that dual core sort of space. But one of the things about the fact that we've moved across to effectively the NT kernel is that we now have the support for going way, way, way beyond that. So four cores, 16, 64. You know, we can go a long way, burn a hole in your pocket type, number of cores. Without the manufacturers having to really retool their whole factory, okay? So it's not a major step up anymore. It's better, the kernel supports it, so now it's just a matter of going and extending the hardware and continue to innovate on top of that. Of course, we also get the benefits of microSD and NFC and a whole bunch of other hardware-related stuff just by the fact that we're now innovating not on two discrete platforms, but now it's basically one platform that's going to move forward and benefit from that shared kernel. So talking about killer hardware, so most of you would have seen the 1020 announcement that came out over the last couple of days. Obviously, it was announced worldwide earlier, about a month or so ago. That is an awesome phone camera. I mean, it is still a phone camera, but it's 41 megapixels. It takes freaking awesome photos. On the other, you've still got the 925, which is a great all-rounder device.
Actually, can I add something just on that while I'm thinking about it? From an enterprise perspective, I mean, obviously, we kind of view the camera as a great consumer, taking photos and things like that. But if you're at one of the sessions this week around lenses, there's also a great opportunity to start thinking about using the camera to be capturing barcodes or using for stock take or using kind of for more enterprise-y requirements. So even though, yep, there's a great camera on there, there are also lots of ways in which that camera can be used to great value inside organizations.
Yeah. In fact, my demo this morning was all about defect capturing. So,
there you go.
With the camera. On the other end of the spectrum, you've still got the range of devices that are really targeting the low end of the market. And actually, what we found from enterprise is that the 520 is selling like hotcakes because it's like 170 from Harvey Norman, which means that at sort of a wholesale price, you're getting it down almost around the $100, $120, $130 mark, I'd imagine. Don't quote me on that. But it's a really low-cost device. And the significance there is it's not a dumb device. It's basically got all of your phone features. Okay, I mean, you can build and deploy apps for it. You can do your standard line of business applications. You can build all of your consumer-facing apps. It's low end because it's not got the same amount of RAM and it doesn't have a secondary camera on it and those types of things, but it's still full featured. Okay, so it doesn't have the high res display. Okay, but it's still full featured. Okay. And then you go through the range and you gradually get more and more features and more specs and stuff like that. But the point is that there is a range of selection. But from an enterprise perspective, you've still got one platform that you're supporting. It's not that you've got to think, okay, well, which version of the OS does that run? And has that got that security patch or anything like that? Okay, it's still one platform. One platform for developers, one platform for managing it.
Ask a question.
Yep,
sure. You'll have to talk to Nokia about that. even though Microsoft just acquired them, but
no. You're talking about
phablets,
whatever you call it.
Yeah.
So what we have talked about that is what the next version of software look like, and there is support on there. And that's as far as the conversation's gone in terms of any commercial sensitivities. Yep.
So it's 16 gigs, not megs, but and I guess some of that comes down to how much data do you realistically expect to pull down for your enterprise that you're going to make available on your phone. Yes, there is some limitations around whether it's got removable SD cards and stuff like that. To be honest, the SD card's somewhat limited in what you can use it for anyhow, because it's limited to your basically consumer-facing stuff, so music and videos. So until that they open that up, there's probably no reason to need to extend the SD card. For like in terms of even if you could, it's not much value to the third-party developers at the moment. So we're hopefully going to see next iteration. I would imagine that they will change some of that a little bit. And hopefully we'll start to see more capabilities around that. We will talk towards the end about what's coming in the next iteration of the software, because there is still that focus of improving the enterprise space. So.
Okay, so the next part we're just going to drill down into some of the kind of enterprise capabilities of the platform, just to give you a bit of a flavor of kind of what is, again, unique in this environment. I guess the first thing to understand is that it is there's a lot of big Windows aspects or big Windows architecture running on the phone. And one of the key things that we introduced, I think it was with Windows 7, certainly Windows 8, was the Unified Extensible Interface, which is basically the next iteration of kind of the BIOS, a more sophisticated kind of the BIOS. Basically that level between the hardware and I guess the operating system interfaces. So it uses the same technology that we have on the desktop operating system. And the key aspects of that and why that's important is that that whole boot process is validated. So everything that loads key core operating system components, be they device drivers or OEM apps, all have to be signed. And they're all validated on boot up. So the key thing behind that is it's not possible to go and insert something like a rootkit or something on those lines and then have, I don't know, keystrokes being taken off that device and then shipped off to some other remote location. So those are the key things in there, is that we have the same technology that we use to protect the Windows on the desktop boot mode. We have that running on the devices, so that core level of technology. In terms of on-device security, with the use of policy, you can also turn on encryption on the device. Now it's important to appreciate that this is actually just encryption on the main storage on the device and doesn't include the SD card. But we have a TPM module in the device, which installs the encryption key. So it's not based on anything that user will go and put in there. So there's core encryption baked into the actual platform. As I said, encryption is available on all phones, all devices, and it can be turned on by policy. It's important to remember, though, that the SD card, you can't turn on the encryption on by policy, but you can disable the use of an SD card by policy. So the key thing about that is you've got a secure boot environment, so you know exactly what's loaded up. You can't go and insert anything else in there. Plus, you can turn on encryption of the whole device. And again, if someone did get hold of that device and crack it open and try and look at the memory, it's all encrypted. One other thing that's interesting in there is that we all get frustrated at times about software updates coming out and various telcos and things like that, holding back updates and critical updates. One of the key things to keep in mind about Windows Phone is that deals have been done with all the telcos, and that if there is an issue with a critical issue around security, then we have the ability to go and push out a security update fix out to the device, independent of a telco. So that has all been agreed with all the telcos around the world to ensure that if there is something that's absolutely mission critical, we need to get something out there, that there is the opportunity to go and do that. By that, it's generally business as usual. Updates come by the telcos sign them off, and they get shipped out to the devices. So there is that aspect to the security as well. FIPS is a US government military standard out there for security of devices and rating of the devices. And as of a couple of months ago, we had completed phase one. And I think we're well on the way to, I think the two phases, and we're well on the way to completing the US military government standard for security. In terms of the application platform, everything that runs in the device, it runs in a secure process model, a chamber model, however you want to go and call it. We run least privileges, so applications can only do what they've basically been designed to do, so you can't have an application suddenly randomly now going and collecting all your contacts without that capability being built into the app and without that capability being declared inside the manifest effectively to enable that kind of functionality. So, and again, you'll find in policies and things like that that users have to opt into those types of things where you might be touching on critical information. So all things like policies and all capabilities that get disclosed to the end user. So when you go and create your applications, you say, I'm going to use X, Y, and Z, these capabilities, and the user is aware of just what's going on there. There is no shared file system. And if you look at other platforms, if you're playing around with Android or things like that, you'll appreciate it's not that difficult to jump into the file system and start playing around with the storage areas where the apps sit. That is not possible. It's not possible for one application to start playing in the storage space of another application and exploring the data that's in there.
So, Dave, just on a side note there, yep. We're doing work for a client at the moment, and they've got an iPhone app, they've got an Android app, and they've obviously engaged us to do the Windows Phone app, and then one of the challenges we keep facing is we have to keep going back to them and asking them, okay, well, what's the algorithm to work out this particular calculation, or where are the assets, the design assets for this particular one? In fact, it got to the point where we said, this is ridiculous. We're going to, every time we go back, we have to wait for 2 days to come back for an answer on these things. We actually opened up we installed the Android app on one of our devices, pulled off the package, pulled it apart, got all of the design resources, was able to reverse engineer the code, basically step through there, pulled out all of the algorithms we need, job done. We never had to talk to the client again. I mean, it's just, and that's a store-based app. Like, it's not an app that's been sideloaded onto the device. It's literally been downloaded onto the app. It's all just clear text. It's just, so one of the issues we had around Windows Phone when it first came out is you could actually do the same thing with Windows Phone. Now, that mechanism was actually due to the fact that you could intercept the requests going to the store and basically pull down the Zap from the store. It was not that you could get it off the device. Okay, the device from day zero has been secured, and up to now there's been no recording of any jailbreaking. There was it was like a jailbreak for dev unlocking your phone, kind of, that was around for with the original Windows Phone 7. But even that wasn't a true jailbreak of the phone, okay? You never got operating system access, you never got clear access to actually what's on the device. So the hole that was available through the store, so pulling off the Zap files and reverse engineering those, that's been closed. Now all Zap files that come down from the store are actually encrypted by the store using the same technology that they use for DRM. So basically it's play-ready DRM. And basically when you go to the marketplace and actually purchase something, they actually give you a license key that gets shipped down to your phone. And it's that license key that actually allows you to open that Zap file and actually run the application on your device. So a bit of background.
Yeah, cool, thank you. Yeah, and there have been some various stats going around looking at malware and things like that across platforms. And I think between ourselves and the iPhone, I think we're by far the lowest issues of malware. And I think it was like almost amount of malware, very little malware. All apps go through through a certification process. They're all vetted, they're scanned. And digitally signed, so it's not possible to go and again monkey around with an app. If an app's sitting up there and it's got a signature on it, that really is the app that you're going to be pulling down. It hasn't been tampered with. In terms of enterprise and ways to think about looking at the apps that you may be building and deploying, so this is kind of the concept here that if you're building apps on devices which aren't domain joined, it's just the kind of general rules of thumb in terms of how you might think about protecting the application and obviously the data that may be coming down. And there are things there you can use to, for example, prompt a user to authenticate into their domain and then use those credentials to, authorize against various datas and services you may be running inside your organization. There are other techniques, for example, the geofencing. You may say, look, this application is only available in this country or however you may want to go and do it inside your organization. but just various ways to go and limit the exposure of your app. I mentioned already that through policy that you can define encryption on the device, across the device, but also another recommendation really is to think the data is absolutely critical, that it's worth considering actually encrypting the data inside your application as well. And we provide a number of APIs to make encryption of data very easy. And using things like TLS in terms of securing the data streams between your device and the backend services. And there are various mechanisms in there by which your author, users can prevent provide credentials to backend services, be it OAuth or IntelliM or various mechanisms. I'm going to talk a bit more about the Enterprise Feature Pack later on, but there are some additional things that we've announced inside what we call the Enterprise Feature Pack. We'll talk about that at the back end of the session. In terms of connectivity, I don't know how many people are aware of this thing called the Unified Access Gateway. Has anyone heard of this? I think most organizations have Exchange. That's kind of how you expose out to Exchange. But you can use the UAG gateway, UAG is a way of also exposing out, I guess, snippets of services inside your organization. So exposing out a service, for example, or maybe exposing out a mobile website. So you can use that as a very good way of that providing whole complete access to your corporate network, over, which you get over kind of like a VPN scenario, of just providing limited access to various key services that you may need to use from inside your apps. And the general recommendation is if you're looking on an intranet then you, of devices, of non-domain devices, that you should really kind of treat them like they're external devices. And again, push all those requests up through UAG in terms of providing secure access to the back-end services. Yo.
How's UAG implemented in Phone 8? Because in Phone 7 it was a separate interface, but it was actually removed in Phone 8.
Oh, sorry. I always thought it was part of the back-end services that exposed them, so.
You, in Phone 7 you could actually specify a UAG server.
Oh, could you?
It was removed in 8.
Right.
It must be using it.
They did remove some things in the move to 8 because with the shift over to NT kernel, they removed things like secured Wi-Fi that end up being dropped out of there as well. And so, there's a number of things that will go back into the feature pack. And I'm assuming that that's one of them as well. VPN's an interesting one because one of the challenges that other platforms that already have VPN face is that it actually ends up being a gateway for apps to get back into the network that shouldn't be having access to network resources. So whilst a lot of enterprises do have VPNs established, because there's no way to lock down phones, particularly Android and unlocked phones, jailbroken phones, it's very difficult to lock those down, even if you do have an MDM in place, because those jailbroken phones can actually report back to the MDM software to say, yep, I'm all good, I'm not in any sort of malicious state, right? So, and all of a sudden, if you then expose the VPN to them, all of a sudden they go, woohoo, I've got the superhighway back to your corporate network. there's a lot of security concerns around actually having VPNs to the phone, because it's just, it potentially could be a recipe for disaster for those sort of malware attacks, so.
I guess the last point around here is really around digital rights management. So obviously, if you're using DRM, inside your organization to protect emails, protect documents, things like that, SharePoint assets, then the DRM client is built into the Windows Phone platform as well. So you can kind of manage that. So the whole scenario where you don't want people to be able to go and forward documents onto somebody else, so that basically respects all the rights out of the DRM system. So that's pretty much a very brief view of some of the security capabilities. So
yep, cool. So one of the things we saw prior to Windows Phone 8 is that the support for the enterprise was very limited in what you could do in terms of managing devices. Namely, literally the only thing you had in your arsenal was the fact that they supported some limited form of exchange policies, right? So a user would get a device, they'd go into your settings, they'd go add email account exchange, and exchange would push down, you know, minimum PIN passwords and things like that, okay? So very, very, very weak forms of policies. And you didn't really have any support for actually going and remote wiping them, reclaiming the devices, any of that stuff. It was very, very much a consumer play for those first iteration of the devices. So, of course, going Phone 8, we still do have support for Exchange ActiveSync. Okay, so you do have a very limited form, even if you don't want to go any further than that within your organization. So you still do have that base set of policies. So, for example, PIN required, PIN history, those types of things. Going forward, obviously Microsoft's there pushing Windows Intune. Okay, so one of the sort of out of the box solutions that Microsoft have is Intune. It does one of the advantages it has. It actually plugs back into System Center, so you get that single pane of glass if you want to manage all of your devices. So whether those be, you know, other platforms, Windows Phone, Windows devices, they can all be managed through System Center. Okay, so and that it does expose out a number of additional policies. In addition to giving you the actual management of those devices as well, okay? So there is a separate enrollment process for, well, not just Windows Intune, but basically any other MDM provider. So what we'll see in a couple of slides is that there's actually a number of providers like Silverback and AirWatch that are all providing that mobile device management. And with Windows Phone 8, they're basically almost on parity, not quite, but almost with some of the with the other platforms, okay? So going forward, a ton of other policies, and we also get additional things around the reporting on those devices as well. Okay, I mentioned there's a number of partners. Okay, so the MDM partners. That was a defect in the slide. That one actually came up first. But there's Silverback happens to be a local partner, but the rest of them are all providing solutions around Windows Phone. So it may be that your customer or yourselves already have an MDM in place to manage other platforms. You can then actually roll that across to Windows Phone now, because the technology is actually built into Windows Phone 8 to allow you to actually manage those. Okay, what I want to do quickly is just switch across to this other machine and. What I'm going to do is actually show you the Silverback solution. I've actually worked with these guys. We actually built the first implementation of their Windows Phone client back before you could actually do device management. So literally all they really wanted to do back then, because they didn't have the full capabilities around actually enrolling the device per se into the organization, literally all they wanted to do is do asset management or asset tracking on that particular device. So literally they get the user to sign in to their app. And basically just identify the fact that that device was all managed by the organization. So with Windows Phone 8, their enrollment process is a little different from what you'd expect to see on, for example, Windows Intune. If you go down the Intune route, then you literally go to settings, go to add company account, which we'll see in a second, and you enter your same username and password that you have for your corporate environment. And that then steps you through the process of enrolling that device within the organization. With Silverback, they actually dissociate themselves away from ADs. The reason being is that some organizations they go into don't have AD as a back end, right? So they literally just have an exchange box, or they don't even have any of that, okay? So their management tools, which are online, allow you to basically go and generate a one-time PIN, okay? So I've entered my username and password here. I go and enroll here, and this gives me a one-time PIN. If I flip over to my device, go across to settings, down here, scroll all the way to the bottom, there is this new entry in here called company apps. If I go here and add an account, and it gives you the kind of false impression that you can add multiple accounts. Actually, you can't. It's just signing up to one organization. I can enter my email address here, so let me just put in brett.g1@silversync360.com, and then instead of entering my regular password, which I would do if you were using, for example, Intune or AirWatch or one of those that integrates directly with AD, here I'm going to enter my one-time PIN and go sign in, and it will go through the process of actually enrolling here. Again, because it's a hosted solution in the cloud, we get this prompt to say that it's going to actually change the server. So we've got actually a different server domain than what's actually in my email address. That's okay, because I realized it was going to do that. And essentially now at this point, my device is actually enrolled in the organization. So if I'd already set a number of policies or I'd specified some client-side certificates that I need, those will already be pushed down to my device as part of that enroll process. It's a standardized enroll process with the exception of that one-time PIN that I had to create, but the experience on the phone is the standard across all of the MDM providers. The last bit is that there's a checkbox there to basically install a company app or hub. So the MDM providers, all of them, including Windows Intune, get the ability to prompt to install one app at the end of the install process. Okay, and that's that checkbox there. The user still has the discretion of unchecking that box. In most organizations, you'd encourage your users not to uncheck that because that essentially, that one app becomes the portal into other apps that may be available via your MDM product. Okay, so your MDM product, like Silverback, you can actually go and specify a number of internal apps, or you could specify links to the store-based apps, and then surface those up within your company app, your company hub, to make them available for the user. And then it's the user's discretion as to whether they go and install those apps or not. Once they have installed those apps, then one of the things that the MDM providers do have the ability to do is actually push out updates. Okay, so you don't have the ability to push down apps to the device, so it's still the user's discretion as to whether they have an app installed. But if they do have an app installed, you can enforce that they have a certain version of the app running it on their device. So I'll complete this, and I will flip back quickly. One last thing. Once I have enrolled in here, you can at any point you can go ahead and actually delete or unenroll the device. Okay, and there's a distinction here between, I guess, user or consumer data versus the company data. Okay, so if I go and unenroll this, and one of the things I might have provisioned as part of the enrollment here is the setting up of an Exchange account and email and things like that. If I go ahead and delete that, those things are also going to be removed as part of unenrolling in the organization. Any camera, you know, photos that I've taken, happy snaps that I've taken with the camera or movies or stuff like that, they're all going to be left alone. That's all my stuff, okay, as distinct from the company, okay? So there is this dissociation between personal data and the company data. Okay, organization can take full control over private apps, enterprise. What we're talking about here is the fact that in addition to going down the path of using an MDM product, if your organization doesn't have want to go through the process of setting up a full device management, you just want to do app deployment within your organization, you can do that without having to enroll every single device. Okay, so normally when you're doing app development, you'd actually build your app, you'd send it off to the Microsoft Store, it'd be certified, and then it'd be made available publicly. Even if it's a hidden app, it'd still make it available publicly for people to download and use. Okay, not great for an enterprise-style application where it's very specific to your organization. What you can now do is take that application that you've built, you can then self-sign it. Okay, so you do need to purchase a signature, a certificate. It's got to come through from Symantec, and it is essentially come from it's a trusted certificate from Microsoft. Okay, so as part of that, when you sign your application, you then need to deploy out that certificate to the devices you want to install the app into. That certificate you need to roll out once for all of the applications you then want to sign with that certificate. Okay, so that's actually a relatively straightforward process. You can literally email that certificate to people if you want. You email a tokenized form of that certificate out. The user then clicks on that and installs it, comes up with a prompt and says, do you want to install that certificate? I'll show you that in a couple of seconds as well. Once they've done that, you can then sign as many applications and deploy those literally by attaching the zap file in an email to the user. The user clicks on it and goes, well, I can install that application. Okay, so it's a really good method for deploying within a small organization if you don't want to go down the path of having an MDM solution. It's also really good actually if you're beta testing apps. Okay, so if you're just wanting to deploy apps, and we use this all of the time now because it's just the easiest way to get apps out to a client. So they've got a regular retail device. We'll sign them with the built-to-roam certificate. Okay. We'll deploy out the built-to-roam certificate, so we'll send the tokenized file to them. They'll click on it and install it once, and thereafter we just send them copies of the zap, and they basically install each one, and it works, and it's beautiful. It's really, really good deployment mechanism. Okay, so what I wanted to do is actually flip back one more time. And one of the tools that we actually built for one of the groups within Microsoft is this thing called the Windows Phone App Manager. And let me just quickly sign into here. So this is actually built on Windows Azure mobile services, so I get the choice of login providers. I'm going to go ahead and log in with my Microsoft credentials. And so normally, if you'd sign in here for the first time, you'd be prompted with a set of steps. And the idea here is that you're going to be producing your first company hub style application for your organization. So most of the time, these sort of company hub style applications are typically the first entry point into your organization for users using their phone. So you'll want to do things like you'll have a list of store-based applications that you might want to include. You might have a list of links that are relevant. You might have some feeds, like some news feeds that are relevant. This company hub actually allows you to specify things like office locations. So if they're traveling around Australia, it'll automatically locate the nearest office. You can actually drill down into those offices and specify rooms and floors and actually get directions between things. And okay, you can specify all of that within here. So what I'm going to do here is just find the MSAU app. You can see that I've already built out a lot of companies. So you basically, it's structured so that you define a company and then you basically define multiple apps within that company. So I'll find the MSU. This is a sample app that we did for actually Brett Gordon from Microsoft. And once it logs in, pulls down the data. Typical, the network drops out just when I need it. It'll get there. One hopes.
We have 4G. If it.
How can the network drop out? It's not good.
The network has dropped out. No, there isn't. You don't have a network connection.
Okay, we will come back to that one. Oh, there we go. No, it's loaded now. Okay, so what you see here is basically the overview of the company. You'll have to excuse the UI. This was really done by a developer in-house, like me. and it was one of those organic things that never really got any design attention, so don't take it as a reflection of our capabilities at all. And it's designed for the enterprise, right? It's all functional. Yeah. So the one thing that I'll point out here is that what you'll see over here is the signing certificate. So we've uploaded our own certificate into there. Basically, the idea here is that anybody can go and download this from the store. The only thing that they actually need to do is enter their signing certificate into there so that they can actually sign the apps themselves, okay? Because we don't want to have the built-to-roam certificate going out to all and sundry, okay? So if you're going to use this, you do need to have a certificate of your own. And so this one, we'll see that's actually got one of our other certificates, I think, actually installed. Once you've done that, you can then go ahead and create one or more applications. I'll go ahead and create another one. There's two different styles of applications you can build here. One which is template driven, so there is only one template in there at the moment, which is this sort of company hub style. And there, when you use that one, you basically go to specify all of those things like other apps in the store and offices and those types of things. The other thing you can do is upload your custom app. So if you're an app developer and you've got your own app and you want to deploy it within the organization, you can come here, you can specify a new app, upload custom application, you can hit save, and we'll actually allow you to then... We'll allow you to go and upload your Zap. We'll sign it using your certificate that you've already uploaded, and we'll give you back a signed form of that application that you can then deploy out to customers. The reason why this is particularly useful, and I use this virtually every day, I mean, I know how to sign a thing. I've got a copy of the certificate locally on my machine, but I need to go and open up PowerShell, and then I need to find the right directory and all of that stuff when I can know that I can go and simply upload it. I can then just hit the sign button. It's actually a matter of just going, after I've uploaded, if I right-click here and go publish, I can basically go generate. And the download links that you see here that after I've generated are downloaded a certificate. Now, it's not the same certificate that you uploaded. It's actually the tokenized form. It's the form that you actually need to send out to your clients. And then you can download the standards and the Zap. Okay. The idea there is that you can then deploy those out to literally via email if you want. If I come back to my emulator, I'm just going to show you an example of this. So I'll go into Internet Explorer. So So what you actually get back from the Windows Phone App Manager is actually a zip file of the tokenized form. So you can actually send this directly out to your customers, or sorry, to your staff. Clicking on there will basically go add company account. Now this doesn't actually add a company account in the sense of enrolling a device into the organization. It literally installs that certificate. So this one's going to install the Built to Roam certificate. I go add. And then if I come back here and I go, I need to pick one that actually exists. Hang on. There we go. So essentially, if you were to email both the certificate out and the zap file, when they click on the zap file, they're going to get a prompt like this. So install company app. If they don't have the right certificate installed already, they're basically going to get a rejection message that basically says unable to install the zap file. If they've got the certificate, they'll get a message like this that basically says, do you want to install this application from this particular publisher, okay? Where the publisher is the name on the certificate. So that gives you an example of how you can actually deploy applications within your organization to do sort of that third-party testing. I was just navigating to a URL there. I mean, it was just hosted on my local machine. But you could send it via emails, or you could put it behind a secure website if you wanted to, that type of thing. So.
Do updates as well?
Yes. So if you point them, if you send them out another zap for the same app, it will actually update them. So there's a little quirk that basically when you click on it and hit install, and it comes up with that prompt, and you hit yes, go ahead and install, it actually takes about 20 to 30 seconds for it to appear in the apps list. If you're doing an update, it'll actually dim the tile out and you'll get a little upgrade symbol there. But interesting enough, the first install, you don't get anything. So it's a bit quirky like that.
Could you use that as a technique for self-updating?
Potentially, yeah. But it'll only work for enterprise apps.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. One of the processes that we're involved in, you might like to see me afterwards if you're interested in, is a product called Build It Beta that we're currently working on. Essentially, it uses this whole concept to basically do beta deployments, very similar to TestFlight. So, okay. So separation of corporate from personal, we just spoke about that. Essentially, when you go and uninstall things, remove the company account. Essentially, it will remove everything to do with that company account and leave all of the personal stuff behind. Okay, so it basically undoes all of that. So that's a brief overview of the management side. I'll pass back to Dave for the development side.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions?
Not at the moment, no. There's no capabilities around deploying marketplace apps through the enterprise. So yeah, the only thing you can really do is point the users at the marketplace and get them to install it themselves.
So there's nothing still stopping them from using a personal email address or Dropbox to move that data around?
Correct, there's nothing to stop them from doing that.
Is there any plans to implement that?
I couldn't talk for the team, I just don't know. So I know that, I mean, there is this enterprise feature pack that they're bringing out in the future. What actually that's made up of, they've detailed a few things, but like VPN support, but they haven't been explicit in terms of what other management capabilities they're going to be.
Is that coming out next year?
ETA is unknown. I mean, they've given indicative time frames of that kind of space, but we just don't know. So.
I think I had it written down somewhere, actually.
Did you?
No, I didn't. Are there any other questions on that? Alrighty. Okay. Is everyone in here a developer? All developers? So most people are developers, not some out here. So I'm guessing probably most people appreciate this already, so we'll go through this reasonably quickly. But in terms of obviously the development environments around Visual Studio, you can go and build native apps, XAML-based apps, you can use various techniques to make sure that your code is as portable as possible. If you went to the session this morning, you'll learn about portable class libraries and things like that. And there are techniques to make sure that you maximize your code reusage. The other way you can go build apps is obviously around kind of a more web-centric way. And there's great support for various frameworks. So things like PhoneGap, which I think is what's called over now. It's Apache Cordova project. There's jQuery Mobile and a whole range of frameworks out there today that work very well in these developer environments and will support Windows Phone plus other environments very well. There's also kind of the hybrid model of being able to build something that's maybe providing some core native functionality and then maybe lending itself, connecting itself to some sort of web property. So organizations often, they don't necessarily want to go and invest across different platforms and some core functionality. So a nice way around doing that is obviously taking the more hybrid approach and then containerizing the web app and then be able to control that app.
That's quite often true around doing purchasing or ticketing and those types of things. So we did a lot of work with Qantas around the release of their app. And whilst you don't realize it necessarily when you're going through the app, when you actually go through to check-in, that's actually using their web check-in model. Okay, so we actually step the user through those. So we've got a web browser that's hosted there. Actually, it starts off screen. We basically force you through a couple of steps automatically by basically running JavaScript and injecting stuff. And then once we get you to the point where you need to interact with it, so typically the dangerous goods prompt, we actually display a form of that website to you. You basically click the appropriate button, and then we step you through the rest of the process without you having to click any more buttons. But essentially, it's that hybrid approach of actually having an application with web content that then you can actually interact with. The one downside about doing the hybrid approach is that, and a lot of people do this for authentication using OAuth and things like that, is that you're hosting a web browser that's actually in a native or like a managed app. The downside there is what the user doesn't realize is that you've actually got entire control over that web browser experience. So the point is, if you want to pull out their username and password, you can. So users, unfortunately, are deluded into thinking that they've been prompted with this web dialogue to sign into Facebook. And they're deluded in thinking that they're relatively safe because it's the Facebook site, right? And it actually genuinely is the Facebook site. What they don't realize is that you've hooked a couple of event handlers in there and are stripping out their username and password. Okay, so there are potentials for security holes there for malicious style applications. And unfortunately, that's one of the problems around these sort of hybrid applications.
No, not wishing to sound too defensive. It's not a Microsoft specific
issue. No, absolutely. No. It's a well documented issue with OAuth.
And across platforms. Yeah.
I mean, without getting too into security talk, the only way around there is very similar to what Apple actually do on iOS to do Facebook, is basically they flip out to the Facebook app and then they return back into the application once they've authenticated. There's no reason why you can't actually do that on Windows Phone, so have a separate app that does auth for Facebook, Twitter, whatever, and then redirect it. That actually doesn't need to be built into the platform. Those providers actually need to understand that they need to provide a mechanism for doing that authentication in their application and make it available to other developers. So,
is there anything similar to that to actually use the Microsoft account signed in on the phone? So
do
you have an access token?
No, there's not. And the reason for that is that actually to promote security, not reduce it, because what they wanted to avoid people doing is taking advantage of the account that's actually natively on the phone. They actually want because otherwise applications would make use of it and not tell the users that they're doing so. Okay, so you get an anonymous form of the Microsoft ID, so you can use that for your internal tracking and things like that. Even that actually requires you to put a capability in there to say that you're doing it. But then if you actually want further access to their profile, you actually need to get them to authenticate again. So.
And then you have to go through that web model or web
model. Absolutely. Azure services actually make that a ton easier, as do things like the Facebook SDK and things like that.
Cool. Yeah. I don't think you touched on this just a moment. It's also a bit, something to be a little bit wary about as well. If you're doing a hybrid kind of app inside your organization, in terms of having that obviously certified, you don't need to worry about that. But if you have an application that you want to publicly publish, that's very much a containerized HTML app, then as part of the certification requirements, you need to make sure that you're adding real value of around the application as a native application. Applications typically won't get through if they really are just a containerized web app sitting aside there, and that's all the app is. So there's something.
Well, they get rejected if they're a host for a website. off the device. If you're actually packaging HTML content actually with the device and it's basically, it's still a standalone app, but all it's just HTML content, that's fine.
Yeah, so you might, if you went and built like a PhoneGap app and it was completely isolated, then that's actually fine. But if all it's doing is just hooking off to the web, that's not so great.
Yeah.
In terms of games, and the other way you can think about this is high-performance media. So maybe you had some funky application that you want to go and build inside an organization. There's native C++, and there's DirectX, and there's Unity frameworks and things like that to go and build out apps. I think this one was you.
Yes. So for those who missed my data session this morning, we do have quite good support for databases on the device now. We actually, in 7.5, we have support for SQL Server Compact, so basically doing linked SQL using that. I wouldn't say it's deprecated, but you probably wouldn't choose to use it anymore. The reason being is if you're building for Windows Phone, chances are you're thinking about the long lines of doing something around Windows 8. There's no support for SQL Server Compact on Windows 8, so you're probably going to start thinking about either you're going down the SQLite route or actually NoSQL at all, so basically just persisting of objects locally on disk. Okay, both of those options mean that you've got some code that can essentially be reused across both platforms and potentially other platforms if you want, but it gives you the flexibility there. The SQLite is basically, you basically install extensions into Visual Studio, and then you get the richness of SQLite. So it's relatively straightforward. It's exactly the same data format. It is native library, okay, so you get all the performance benefits of it being a native code. So. This really talks to the fact that there's a ton of enterprise-y kind of data that you probably want to expose out to your phone, and so it's a matter of just trying to work out the best mechanism for actually getting that information out of your organization and down to the phone. It's not just necessarily a matter of exposing an endpoint and having all your services available. If you start to think about your organization as the cloud or the central source of knowledge, you start to think about your mobile devices as sort of end-user devices that are going to be periodically connecting and dragging down some data and then potentially serving data back up. And so what you really want to do is reduce the back-end load on your SQL boxes. Okay, so if you look at a lot of the architecture around going to the cloud, it's all about avoiding touching the SQL box directly. So don't have a service that literally pulls stuff from the SQL box. If you can help it, you basically want to take stuff off your SQL box, push it out to blob storage or table storage or some other form of highly scalable storage so that when you're accessing from a mobile device, you get the benefits of going through CDN endpoints or you get the benefits of not having to go back to SQL all the time. Okay, so if you can avoid doing that, then you can actually scale a lot better within your organization. Clearly, some organizations don't need to scale, okay? So if you're a small 10-man organization, chances are exposing services off of one SQL box is probably going to be okay? But as you start to scale to 100 or 1,000 users, all of a sudden you start to need to think like you're playing in the cloud, okay? So you start to need to think about multiple entry points, load balancing, those types of things to get out to mobile devices. Okay, I'll pass back to you for 8-10.
Okay, yep. So we've kind of talked about some of the development models before, be it native or be it kind of more web-centric. I think it's just important to keep in mind that the Windows Phone does inherit the IE10 engine off Big Windows. So it does use hardware-accelerated graphics and all the kind of capability that you find on the desktop. So it is very fast and very capable and supports great support out there for HTML5 as well. We support the kind of things you see out there in HTML5 land, and you find frameworks like things like PhoneGap and Censure take advantage of this, for example, using offline storage in terms of IndexedDB and app caches and things like that. It's isolated, so you can't add plugins. Doesn't support a plugin model, so again, reducing the kind of security boundaries there. And we provide the same level of smart screen filtering that we provide on the desktop. So again, all those kind of things that you're used to in terms of making sure that you have a secure experience on the web provided on the inside the device. We have NFC in the device, so capabilities. So some devices will have NFC capability built into them. And it just provides a great experience there in terms of being able to connect devices, send data. You'll see with NFC tags, it's a great way of establishing connections. So just trying to reduce some of the complexity of people connecting to devices. If you've been onto the Nokia stand, you'll see that a great demo is you can pick up your phone and just basically plonk it on top of the speaker and it uses NFC then to negotiate a high bandwidth protocol. So
I'm going to do another plug for the Windows Phone App Hub or the App Manager here, because so one of the scenarios that comes up quite often in enterprises, and particularly large organizations now, is trying to, as they move to a hot desking approach, is trying to locate where people are. Or more importantly, I get out of a lift and I know I need to go to a certain meeting room. How do I get there? You know, those types of scenarios are where location becomes important, even within the organization. So not just between buildings, but actually within organization buildings. And the reason why I'm talking to this to NFC is because quite often one of the scenarios that we came up with for solving that is you come out of the lift, there's an NFC port on the wall, you tap on it, it opens your company app and basically says where you are, and you basically pull from the drop-down list a list of the meeting rooms that you got to go to, and then it displays you a floor plan of how to get from where you currently are to the room that you want to go to. The plug for the hub is that you can do all of that within the hub. So you literally upload a floor plan. You basically say, here's a list of my rooms, and this is how I go from the lift to these various rooms. You can literally draw it on there. And then when you publish that app out to the members of your organization, when you deploy out the NFC points, which again, you can put the tags actually in the app manager, they can actually go ahead and tap on the tags, and it'll basically tell them where they are and give them directions to where they want to go to. So pretty cool stuff. NFC is one of these weird things. It's like kind of cool tech, but if you actually get beyond the coolness and actually start to think about it in the enterprise space, there's actually quite a few scenarios where you could start to use it. It makes less sense in the consumer space because there's a lot of parallels between QR codes and what NFC can do, right? So it's basically identification of URLs, identification of you know, contact information, those type of things. QR codes are just as good, and they're cross-platform. So NFC is something that I wouldn't say it's Microsoft specific, because there are other devices out there, but iOS doesn't have it. Very few Android devices actually have it. So it's really almost a niche area that Microsoft's now playing in, but particularly in the enterprise, because if you're going to do a fleet of Lumias out there, or you do have people who are sporting Windows phones, it can actually add some value to the organization. So.
The 520's got the NFC?
Yes, my understanding is that all of the Lumias do, yes. I'm not from Nokia, so just check me on that one, but I'm pretty confident that they've got all of their Lumia devices are NFC enabled. Yeah.
You can imagine kind of like logistics and stock control and systems like that, using NFC tagging and just managing the flow of goods inside an organization.
Time sheeting, clock on, clock off, all of those types of things. So,
in terms of mapping capability inside the platform, again, I guess most of you are pretty much familiar with this, but there's a massive investment between, particularly the work between Nokia and Microsoft, and the Navtech core engines in there and data sets. I guess the key thing about that is that data is also available offline, so great for some scenarios where there just isn't great connectivity. So you can imagine mining or something along those lines, where they may not necessarily have great connectivity, but they want to better have some sort of map and geolocation based.
Well, not just that. I mean, think of if you've ever travelled outside of Australia and you got hit by roaming data charges.
Yes.
Like if you're going to the US, so I think one of the Nokia girls was telling us this story that she went to Hong Kong. And of course, before she went, she downloaded not only the maps, she also downloaded the language packs. So she was going somewhere in Hong Kong, had to go to a meeting, hops into a cab, and basically, language barrier, didn't know where to go. And the cab driver didn't know, like, she held it out and said, I need to go here. And the cab driver's like, I don't know where that is. So she actually got the directions in I think it was Nokia Maps at that stage, but and then converted it across to Nokia Drive, or it's now Here Drive, and it actually gave the directions in the native language to the operator of the cab. And it's just like, that's just an awesome story, and not a cent of data usage, by the way. It was all done on the device. Yeah. And that's just like, whoa, that's pretty cool.
Do you guys know anything about the Street View or anything model that Nokia's supposedly creating? The street level maps?
I don't know much about that at all, no. So.
And I guess the key thing about this, obviously from a developer perspective, you can get at all this thing, be it things like turn-by-turn, offline support, various capabilities.
I mean, it's Navtech, right? So they're continually updating all of their maps anyhow, so they do have the street cams, the cars that go around and do all of the mapping.
There's been photos of one of these Nokia vehicles with
right.
measurably high-resolution street view.
Right,
so
okay.
Not very promising, but
driving around with 1020s on the... strapped onto the roof.
Yeah, that would be positively scary, but okay.
No, it's speculation on our part.
Yeah. With the download maps, are they just for a Nokia device,
the others are able to access it too. Yep, it was one of the feature ads of, as part of came out of that partnership, but it's Phone 8, basically. You can still use the Bing Maps if you want, but increasingly in your apps, you should be using the Nokia Maps, because the Bing Maps, you don't get that offline experience, that, whereas the new mapping control with the Nokia Maps, you get all of that, and it's across all platforms. Yes, definitely. And it's the same set of maps, so you don't need to download those maps specifically to your app. It's shared across all of the apps.
But basically, with the Nokia devices, they obviously provide the core mapping capability, and then they added things like Nokia Drive and things like that, which they do now make across for charge. Now, they make the on other platforms, they'll make the app available. But they will typically charge you if you want to download maps outside your region. That's typically how that works. It's a question, I think.
Yeah, I was just wondering whether here or the Navtech was included in that deal that Microsoft did the other day.
I couldn't talk about the deal.
A license. Basically, it was a license for services. So there was some core technology acquisition around devices and services, and there was licensing of mapping services and of some of the patents. That's what the press release said. So. In terms of kind of other announcements, which are obviously pretty important from an enterprise perspective, that support has gone out now from 18 months to 36 months. So obviously organizations, a lot of organizations aren't wanting to churn devices over at the same rate as potentially consumers. And we also announced the Windows Enterprise Feature Pack. And you can see things in there. They're pretty kind of fundamental, some of the things on there. So secure MIME for encrypted emails. We mentioned some of the work that's going around there around VPN, so you can have applications trigger VPN support to better get into core services inside an organization. EAP, so the Extensible Authentication Protocol, so we're adding that in there. Again, I think it's considered to be one of the most secure. There's a security guy here, I suspect, but one of the more secure wireless protocols. I don't think we actually know exactly what they are, but there are some enhancements going on to the MDM policies as well in terms of what you can and can't do in terms of locking things down. And the last one there is around certificate management for basically managing that whole certificate process, enterprise certificates in terms of being able to sign apps and have those operate. One last point I wanted to make just on here, I don't think we touched upon this, is also the ability, did you mention the ability here about if an employee leaves an organization can also say, all these enterprise apps, I'm going to delete those from the phone, plus all the data, but leave in place all their own personal data, photos, music, applications.
Yeah, so I mean, I talked about the fact that you could unenroll the device, like actually on the device, but of course, because you're actually enrolled in an MDM product, the MDM product or the organization itself can actually forcibly unenroll you as well. So they can basically say that device is now blocked or wiped, and actually that corporate data, so the apps, any of the certificates, any of the enterprise data that's actually on there will actually be revoked as well. Correct, yes. No, you have no management if you're just going to send out the certificate. To be honest with the, if you're doing that method of deployment, you do need to be a little bit careful about how far you send that certificate, because there's no security on that certificate. So if you let it go, it might not just come back. And so if it gets widely circulated, Microsoft might say, you know what? You've overused that certificate, or it's now freely available, because they really don't want people to be using that as an alternate to the App Store. So they might just go, no, you know what, we're going to revoke that one. And so they do have that capability of revoking those certificates, and that will apply to all of those devices. So all of the devices do a call home, both if you're enrolled into MDM, it will do a call back to the MDM provider, but also it does a call back to Microsoft to make sure it's a validated device.
And I think that's pretty much it. So just covering off what we talked about, some of the hardware innovations, shared kernel, all the work that we do around robustness and security across Windows, Windows Phone inherits all that. We talked about application security containerization, application management, application deployment, application development, Yeah. Kind of all the, hopefully, a bit of an enterprise spin on it. So that's pretty much the session.
If you guys got any questions after the event, please feel free to email us and we'll put you in contact with the relevant security people. So if you need.
Cool.
So. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you.